Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
And I want to begin the show straight away with our two guests who are right across from me in studio this morning. They're a hugely successful couple in very separate areas. Rady Pete is a singer, multi-instrumentalist with a brilliant band, folk band, Lancome. It's been enjoying huge popularity in recent years. Dan Lambert is the manager of the BAFTA-nominated group Kneecap and also the chief operations officer at Bowes Football Club. A lot going on in their lives. But we're not here to discuss their careers this morning, something far more personal. Good morning to you both.
Morning, thanks for having us.
You have a little girl together.
We do, yeah.
Rady, what age is she?
She's 3, she just went 3.
And she's your only child?
She is, yeah.
When did you realise that something was different about your daughter?
When she was about 17 months, I just noticed that she didn't really adjust well to new environments, and I was just starting to notice changes between like her and, let's say, my friend's children of the same age. Mm. So I looked up, you know, the signs of autism, and I rang the public health nurse, and then it just, you know, from there it was, just became really clear that that's probably what we were dealing with. Just discovered that there was all kinds of things that she should be doing by that age that I had missed, basically, like, you know, hand gestures and words. I didn't realise she was meant to be saying words. I didn't realise she should be able to wave bye-bye, that kind of stuff. And for me, you know, it's quite a shock and realisation, because, you know, that's the thing about autism, is that you don't, they, like, I had a totally normal birth, and then you think you have a totally normal child, and you're envisioning, you know, what your future is going to look like, what their lives are going to look like. You know, I was planning what instrument she was going to play and all, you know.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you realise everything's going to look different, and you have to kind of, for, you know, this maybe is not everybody's experience, but for me, I had to kind of grieve for the child that I thought I had, you know. And it's really like, it's a very emotional thing. Like, it's very difficult. And unfortunately in Ireland, it just gets more difficult from there.
And as a couple, Dan, you're doing this, you have all these hopes and dreams, you're imagining the future for your little girl. And that it's a form of grief, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. As Rady said, you've got certain things mapped out and you think maybe this is the way things will be. Like, and I'd be kind of more practical probably than a Rady, and I would have assumed that, you know, once that's identified, and wrongly so, because look, a lot of people have spoken out about this for a very long time. If you search back, and we're right at the start maybe of something here, but the you know, you've got this expectation, I suppose, that if there's an issue, especially for a young child, and especially... you know, for young children in a position where they need assistance are vulnerable, you know, and I suppose Ireland has a terrible track record in terms of its protection of vulnerable people since the foundation of the state, really. And then you find, I suppose, and where we are now, that the services that you should receive and that other people receive across the world are so far behind and so broken here. And, you know, one thing I'd like to say, I know we're just starting a conversation, but,
yeah,
you know, we were obviously phoned, and you mentioned at the start, like, you know, our careers or whatever, but we were phoned by the Irish Times and were contacted by your show. The vast, vast, vast majority of people in our position aren't phoned by anybody, and they're in a much more difficult position, that they don't have, they're not able to come on the radio
profile
and speak about it.
Yeah,
and really,
exactly.
We're coming in here really to speak to, not just for our daughter, but for the tens of thousands of kids are in the same position, and families in the same position.
And you've come to know these parents. Can we just step back to your own path? Because obviously you discover that your daughter, she needs help from professionals. How do you begin seeking it out?
So, you know, at the beginning, I was under the impression that, like, you know, just like a basic foundation of a society would be that, like, if you have a child that has special needs or additional needs, that you will... someone, you know, healthcare professionals will then come in and show you, you know, tell you what to do or provide help or whatever. So that belief was totally shattered. It really was.
Very quickly.
Yes, very quickly. And like, so you're dealing with the emotional repercussions of this realisation, which essentially is changing the rest of your life and their lives. And then what you actually come to realise is that you're operating in a system where, you know, nothing is going to be done at the appropriate time. Everybody in the system is telling you, like, listen, I know it shouldn't be like this, but this is the way it is. You know, like, And the people who work within this system are hardworking, diligent people who are way overburdened. Like, their caseloads must be absolutely crushing. It must be so demoralising to see children years too late. Like, they know from a professional standpoint how much is being missed when they see these children, you know. But honestly, as the parent, it's like the worst journey of discovery in the world. And I kept feeling like, at every point, if I could just get to the next stage, if I could just get her assessment of need done, if I could just, you know, and it is a battle. That's the thing they tell you. They even tell you in the HSE, you know, like the people who work in it, they're like, you have to be an advocate for your child. You're going to have to battle, battle, battle for everything. But you're told this while you're also trying to work, you're trying to do your job, right. You're trying to take care of a special needs child, you're trying to keep your life together, you know what I mean? Mm. And you're also trying to learn this vast amount of information about autism, you know, and about whatever particular issues the autism is causing your child, you know. So it's total overwhelm. And then also just disbelief. Like, I just couldn't believe the things I was being told. The wait lists I was being told. I couldn't believe, I was like, that can't be right. Mm. And I very early on was told, you should leave Dublin. I was told, and I'm really
leave
grateful.
The country.
Yeah, I was told leave Dublin, leave the country. And I'm grateful to all the people who were so honest with me at the start, even though it was crushing to hear, because they had the decency to give me the true lay of the land, you know, and to kind of prepare me for the very difficult road I was going to have to go down. And that's why, like, I did have to really fight to get her assessment of need. But the thing is that you keep thinking that, like, at the next step, the people will come to help and it'll become fair and something will happen. And then you get to the next step and you realise there's nothing there. And, like, to realise that, you know, you do the assessment of need, you get, like, even the referrals process as well, like, trying to figure out how this thing works is like a full-time job. It's labyrinthine. It is really difficult to figure out.
So even getting the appointment and waiting for it, which is a huge wait, way beyond what's promised. But you said you literally have to campaign and fight to get that appointment.
Yeah.
You did get an appointment in December. Was it this? Is this the assessment, Dan? Or
yeah, we got the result in December.
Yeah, we went around last September. So I think the rule is, and I think it's a legislative rule, that it's 6 months the wait should
correct,
be.
It's
We waited, I think, about 13 months, and it was down to ready sending in a letter of complaint and some advice from the As I Am charity. So that's, and I think getting seen, you know, in a year and 2 months is probably quicker than a lot of other people.
Yeah,
because
it
of the work that Rady had done. But we and were
that's
sent
all, that's to, also
had to
like
campaign
work,
for that.
I had
late
to campaign,
appointment.
And I also had to be like a real kind of like, you know, I had to ring a lot and be really persistent and probably really annoying. And like to find the time to do that while you're also, I can't stress enough, you're also working, you're also taking care of your child, you know, and then you have this kind of mountain of admin to just try. Beg for the literally beg. I have begged, mm. I have cried, I have begged, I have, you know, I have never shouted.
You didn't want to be, basically.
Yeah, oh yeah, like you have to, you know, because you feel desperate. You know, you literally are desperate. Like I even trying to get a creche place for her. Like I, you know, have begged many times.
Tell us about that appointment in December, because it is a private?
Yeah, so
it's been contracted by the HSE to help this waiting list.
Yeah, I can only tell you like my experience of it, and I won't tell you where it is. But when we got the letter, it was in an industrial estate on the outskirts of the city. So I looked up the name of the provider. It wasn't set up very long, just on a CRO search. So I immediately thought this is probably somebody, an entity that's been set up to take a contract. It's probably quite a lucrative contract to clear waits, which in theory there's nothing wrong with. But
they're arrived, professional and they have the standards required and so on.
Yeah, you'd assume so. I'm sure they do. But we arrived there and it was like a Ken Loach film. And this is what I thought I worried it would be. But we got there and it was kind of like a Better Call Saul type office.
Right.
And it's sort of funny to say it, but you arrived and it looked like it used to be a solicitor's or an accountancy firm or something.
It's grim and this is the best that...
Yeah, well, they hadn't bothered to paint the place. And there was a waiting room that was, you know, would have previously probably held 10 people at desks. And you've no furniture, two chairs and an IKEA tent in the corner. Like it was a Ken Loach. It was like if you had to set it up as a scene in a Ken Loach film, you'd be horrified to see it. And everything about the place, somebody had come in and spent as little money as possible You know, not to buy furniture, not to paint the place, not to make it a welcoming environment for anybody, let alone a child. And I think that that's the way I feel about how that was delivered. I think somebody has decided coming in there, they take the contract and they'd make as much money as possible. And, you know, having a 2-year-old arrive into an environment like that, it's hardly the right environment to assess them because it just didn't feel like somewhere they'd want to be. And it doesn't cost a lot of money to paint a room or put down a carpet, but no one had bothered to do that.
And there's a lot of money sloshing around in the health service at the moment, but this is the reality that parents like you are facing at the moment. The important thing is getting access to the Children's Disability Network team. This is the specialist service.
Yeah.
You've been given the first appointment with these special support carers. What date is that, Rady?
It's July 2028. So officially at the moment, the wait list is 4 years long.
And your child as well? She's three.
So she would...
She's nonverbal.
Yeah, she's still totally nonverbal, yeah.
So the idea that she will be 6.5 years of age when she gets access to this vital support.
Yeah, and also with autism, like every single study is all about early intervention. Like that's what's proven to work. So like essentially, you know, you're a wait that long is changing the fate of the child, basically.
What should her care look like now?
She should be getting occupational therapy, speech and language therapy. There's this, you know, ABA therapy. Like there's a lot of things that are proven to work with children, but they have to be implemented at the right time, you know. And if they're not, a lot of potential is kind of lost. And, you know, that's the really difficult thing is that you're spending every day with this child and you're trying your best. And I've tried to implement a lot of the, you know, I've tried to learn as much as possible and try to implement it myself.
You've literally been reading textbooks on...
Literally been reading textbooks, yeah. I feel like I'm doing a degree in autism. And, like, it's very hard to find the time to do that, to find the energy. And, you know, it's just exhausting, to be honest. It's totally exhausting.
Dan, what can you do in the meantime between now and July 2028?
Well, the only thing you can do in the meantime is what Rady's doing and what we're trying to do is to learn yourself. But there's a reason people are experts. There's a reason that you have, you know, it's the CDNT, is the Children's Disability Network team. And they're a team of experts for a reason because they've got the expertise. There's psychologists, there's speech and language, as we said, nurse, you know, and they're an occupational therapist. And it's their knowledge as a unit, you know, that's what our daughter needs now. But like I've went to family support groups and like one example, the only other option you have is to go to a private provider, and you mix private providers, for-profit providers with young vulnerable children. That's a bad mix from the outset. And we already have a two-tier society in Ireland. All the social safety nets are gone in most respects, many of them caused by the housing
crisis.
Does that
mean you're not considering the private?
Well, there's also very long wait lists for the private route. Mm-hmm. So even if you have the privilege of being able to go private, which a lot of people don't, mm-hmm. like even at that, you're still waiting.
Yeah,
you know what
incredible.
I mean?
Yeah.
And the other thing is that if your child has autism, for example, like they need what's called a multidisciplinary team, which means they need all of those disciplines to interact and be, you know, communicating with each other. To there might be one multidisciplinary private place in Ireland, but like that doesn't really exist. So then you can only go private, like with individual therapies, and they're not then. Like there's no communication between them, which is not what a child with autism needs.
Right. And on that, just like to give you one example, and I won't tell you where it was, obviously I don't know the person's name even, but I went to one family support meeting, and there's lots of those where, you know, where people who are experiencing the same thing. But I went to one in a kind of a working class area in Dublin, and it was people just speaking about their experience. And a woman stood up who was a single mother who had a 6-year-old nonverbal child who hadn't been seen yet, and she'd sold her car. So she said she'd sold her car the year before, she worked, and she'd sold her car to access some private therapy. And she said the therapy had helped her son. He'd come on a lot, and then the money was gone. So now she's no care. She's still a single mother. She's still working. She's seen her child less because now she's to get a bus to work and back. So she's done everything she can. She's still waiting on the state. And in the meantime, her own personal position has been totally changed in terms of no transport for her and her son. And that, I'm sure there's thousands of those stories. And that lady isn't here to speak to you, you know, because that lady's probably working, you know, every hour God sends and now having to travel. And that's these stories are not uncommon. That's so wrong, you know.
Yeah, they're not rare. I mean, that's just absolutely soul crushing, that story about that woman.
Yeah,
and
she wasn't
so
there to tell
people.
There's so many
people in worse situations than us as well, you know, like cause every autistic child is different now, you know what I mean? Like people are dealing with, some people are dealing with like extremely like kind of, you know, a lot of, let's say, meltdowns from older children where they're, you know, violent towards themselves, towards their parents, and as they're growing, that's a really big problem, you know, like kind of trying to manage that and stuff. So like, yeah, like every child on that wait list and every child in Ireland, like trying to access these services, you know, that's somebody's pride and joy. That's somebody's whole life, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's parents suffering and like, yeah, like to be put in that position where like, you know, you're so desperate. Like, it shouldn't be that. Like, it's hard enough to realise that your child needs this extra care. Like, you really need to just be able to experience the emotions of that and then to be taken care of by the health services. Someone should just come in and be like, look, this, you know, you're going to be, you're going to deal with this in your own way or whatever, but we're here to help. We're going to do this for your child. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And that they can take some of the burden off. Whereas instead, it's just burden upon burden upon burden. Do you know what I mean?
I just want to give people a sense of the scale of this. Because it's a terrible failing in our public service and it affects a huge number of people. We've got 43,000 children. Now, they're in the services at the moment. And the very service that you're waiting till July 2028. And in the meantime, we've got 12,920 children on a wait list. That's as of 1st of January this year. And the list only reduced by 1,377 in the last year. You've been thrown into this life of advocacy, of knocking doors, of emailing, of being here speaking on behalf, really, of other parents. I mean, how are you managing all of this yourselves?
And it's probably like when you say, I'm really conscious that we're, as Reddy said earlier, we're at the start. It's, well, it seems like we're in the middle, but really at the start. And after this comes, I read articles only this week and some of them on RTE, on your own website, about people trying to access school places and not being able to. And one woman who tried to get onto 46 schools and has a child who's in the car every day saying, car, 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 because they want to go to school and can't with their siblings. So, like, I suppose what you're trying to do is find as much information as possible and take this opportunity that you contacted us to speak. But there's so many people out there who know more than we do and really at every single turn now. So initially it's the assessment of need. Now it's the way for the CDNT team. Now it's going to be trying to find a preschool place. It's going to be trying to find a school place. So in every direction, the system is broken. And it's important to say, and I think we have probably covered it, but like the staff in the system, you know, deserve huge credit. Who would want to work in an environment like that? Because by the time when you get to speak to somebody, you're so kind of at your wit's end, or you need it so badly that you're kind of, you know, you maybe treat people a little bit.
They're like probably expecting you to be, because that's probably all the parents they're meeting.
Yeah. Exactly.
Also, a lot of the time, like, they expect you to be shouting at them on the phone, to be honest, because, like, obviously parents are so desperate that, like, you know, like, there's, you know, you can tell that they spend a lot of their time dealing with really, like, distraught parents, basically.
Everything you've learned from support groups and from, it sounds like, the staff you've been speaking to, what's the problem? Because it's not money.
Well,
it's political will, though. The money's
political will. And also, I will say that I think this housing crisis does play a part in this as well, because, like, it was explained to me that, like, you know, the area we live in is the worst. And it's because, you know, because we live in Dublin near the city centre, and it's, you know, it depends on how many children are in the area and all this kind of stuff. But, like, that's also where rents are highest, you know. So, again, why would someone want to work in that sector if their wage is what it is, but rent is what it is? Like, newly qualified therapists, like, why would they want to stay in Dublin and work in this system when, like, most of their wage is going to go on rent instead of, like, going over somewhere else, like to Australia or something, and they can actually save a bit of money?
And they
so that is part of it.
Sometimes they will just realise this is not going to work out and they move. So they're getting the staff and holding on to them seems to be...
That's holding on to them as well, because this is the thing, is that, you know, we're talking about, like, that there's just not enough resources. Could you imagine being the person who's actually seeing those children? And how demoralising that would be, and how, like, your work life must be so difficult. And I think there's a lot of turnover of staff because it's literally too much for people, you know. But that's because they're too stretched thin, basically. They need more staff, they need more resources, they need more funding, they need, you know.
We have a statement from the HSC, which I'm sure the words will be familiar to you, but they say everyone working in the HSC and in our Children's Disability Network teams, that's the CDNT that Dan's referring to, is very aware of the importance of children's disability services and early intervention in the lives of many families. It is not acceptable to have to wait an extended time for either an assessment of your child's needs or therapy that would help your child and family. We are sorry to those families who have had a poor experience in trying to access services, and they want to say that there are 93 CDNTs, 43 23 managed by the HSE, 50 managed by voluntary disability organisations. And they repeat again, we are sorry to those families. And then they point out the numbers which I've already mentioned, which the support's underway for 43,000 and the people on the wait list, like your child, 12,920 at the moment. And they reference many of the recruitment challenges, which are staff vacancies and an increasing rate of referrals, the growth in the number of children with complex needs, and again, retention, holding on to the staff. And they say they're going to expand the advertising and engagement for recruitment.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry isn't good enough. It just isn't good enough. Like, I'm sure they are sorry, but it's, you know, like, this is, for anyone actually living this, like, to hear that kind of statement, you're just like, well, that's great, but like, when are you going to do that? How are you going to do that? And for, I have to say as well, at the end of the election, to hear all the politicians suddenly start talking about the CDNT, children with disabilities, bandying it around like a little, you know, flag, like, oh, we'll do this for you. And all the parents who've been waiting on all that stuff for so many years, you know, suddenly hearing their life being talked about like that. And it was just used as a way of getting re-elected. It's exactly the same people who'd overseen this whole system completely collapse and they'd done nothing about it. And then suddenly they're using it to get re-elected. Like, the HSE is, like, it's not good enough. It's not good enough.
Statements, they can be cold like that because they come obviously from a bureaucracy. We have messages that I'm sure will be familiar to you, listening to other parents as well in support groups. 51551, by the way, for the text. Good morning. I'm crying listening to your guests. You've barely started telling the story. I also have an autistic child and I'm a few years ahead of them. That's what you're saying, Dan, about the issues are right throughout the system. My heart goes out to that family. My younger brother was not properly assessed. It's going back to the 1980s. Through persistence, my mother managed to get him some support, but my brother never really got the development or the educational chances of his peers. It's from John in Drumcondra. As a parent of a child with disabilities, it's like being constantly gaslit. We are told one thing, but the reality is another, and you're driven to your wit's end trying to exist within a broken system. That's from Al in Sligo, which kind of highlights that it is right across the whole country. You fear that even if there is change, it'll be too late for you and for many of the
parents. I think so, yeah. I think that, you know, realistically, the kind of overhaul that would have to happen will be too late for our daughter. And like a lot of why we're talking and why we're, you know, as Dan says, like, it's total privilege that we get asked to be on shows and get contacted by journalists. A lot of the reason we're doing this is like, I don't want any other parents to go through this. It's just, it shouldn't be happening. The thought of, like, you know, mothers and fathers in the future still dealing with this, like, I just don't want it to happen to anybody else.
It's incredible. People would be amazed that you've kept your very public jobs going throughout all of this. And it must be such a different world
come
from red carpets and glitzy to your struggles at home.
Yeah, and like, we both have to, like, my job, I have to appear very highly functional, you know, like, I have to go on stage, and like, Lancome has cancelled a number of gigs in the last, and this is why. And
really?
It's not really, like, you know, it is partially to do with, you know, not being able to be away from my daughter for too long, but sometimes it's literally that I cannot, like, with my own mental health, I cannot get it together to get on stage. And like, and a lot of it is after, let's say, appointments where I would have found out that, oh, there is no services here, or no, it's another wait list. A lot of it was directly after realising how much the system was going to fail our daughter, you know, and just the devastation that brings. Like, so I had to, like, I couldn't actually, like, I think I've managed to do a lot of my job, but I couldn't at certain points, you know. I was nominated for an Ivor Novello.
Yes.
I didn't go because that morning I had an appointment for our daughter with a neurologist. And I had, at that point, I had learned that all of these appointments usually are devastating. And it was. And I'm glad I didn't book a flight because I spent the day totally devastated. I just didn't go.
And an award nomination, one of the most prestigious things.
It's one of the most prestigious things.
One of your dreams you would have had as a musician.
Yeah. And I just said, no, I'm going to be in bits, so I just won't go.
Dan, how are you doing? You've kneecapped the past year. Everyone's been watching it unfurl and you've had this private struggle in your head.
In ways, probably some of it's been a distraction, you know, because like it's, you know, you can't, like, I'm able to, thankfully, in maybe lucky my personality, trying to separate things a little bit and try and, you know, look at kind of practical steps. But if we've outlined here chatting to you, like, there isn't, like, there aren't any, you know, real solutions here. And as Ray said earlier, like, somebody said to us early on, a doctor said, you'd be better off living in any other country in Europe. You're better off living in Romania, in Italy, in Scandinavia. You will get better services. You'll be seen, you know, a child at the same age as our daughter in one of those countries would already be well into the system, yeah, and receiving multiple
and
services.
We did genuinely look at all those options. Like, we genuinely looked at moving, you know. But we're both from Dublin. Like, our daughter has cousins on both sides and, you know, aunties and uncles and grandparents. And it's like, you know, you don't want to lose all of those connections for your child as well,
you'd be getting services, but totally isolated, which is totally isolated, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you need help yourselves because you're traumatised by this experience.
I certainly, like, have really... Yeah, like, I've had insomnia since, like, chronic insomnia since... I first started talking to the public health nurse about this. You know, as I say, I've had to cancel my work. You know, like, the emotional impact and the exhaustion of that kind of everyday battling. And also everyday, like, that you're waking up because, you know, the main thing, our child, her main area, like, that she struggles with is communication, and she's totally nonverbal, as I say, or whatever. So you have to get up every single day and speak to this child as though someday they will speak back. Mm. And that takes a lot of energy and strength to do that, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very tiring because she doesn't speak back. And you just have to keep doing it every single day, you know. And, like, that's upsetting. And you also, like, are trying to enjoy your child as well, because she's three, she'll only be three once. You're also conscious of the time passing, and you're like, I don't want this to all be bad memories. I want to have enjoyed my child.
It's desperately sad. I really feel for you. There's a message that says, I wanted to let you know, tell that mother she's advocating for us all. I feel like that could be me speaking on your show. I'm in the very same position. Well done for highlighting this on the programme. I mean, it's very, very difficult place. But listen, you're two incredible people for what you've endured to come out and speak to all those parents that you've met. And I'm sorry it's so difficult.
But it's so difficult for all of those families. Like, this is just one child. This is just one. I'm just one mother talking, one father. Like, you know, there's so many people going through this. And that's why I'm just trying to, like, just let, because that's the thing, you might hear about it fleetingly on the radio and then you go back to your life. For these people, this is their lives every single day. There's, you know.
No, we hear you, and it makes us angry as well. You know, it also makes us very confused, because we are, as a country, one of the highest spenders on health in Europe. The HSE is awash with managers, and the services are just far, far below what taxpayers deserve. And it's not as bad elsewhere in Europe. That's why people are telling you to go. It's an exceptional failure here. All the same problems. Look, right now there is a new Minister for Health, and I've heard her, Jennifer Carroll McNeill, been angry on behalf of parents as a TD on this very issue in recent years. There's a new Secretary General as well in that department. Both of them have enormous power, and I hope they listen to you as well. But in the meantime, thank you, and take care. Look after yourself.
Thanks for having
me. As you will, and good luck to your little daughter as well. But Ready Pete and Dan Lambert, thank you so much. We're going to let you go now. I'm going to jump back to the kind of emotional interview, very emotional interview we just had with Ray D. Pete and Dan Lambert, and trying to access services for their little daughter. What a beautiful couple. Peter in Dublin is sending prayers and thoughts. Well done to Ray D. and Dan. Incredibly powerful. And of course, lots of messages from people who have gone through the same thing. This dad from Mayo says, it's very upsetting to hear what this poor family are going through, and it's replicated all over the country. Lip service, statements from service providers and government only isolates parents and children even more. We are the parents to a brilliant young man of 22 who struggled to get supports as a child 20 years ago. There are people as well just trying to appeal to keep keep the hope alive. But unfortunately, it's the exhaustion of campaigning all the time. Someone else says, this mirrors so accurately the story of our own with my daughter who's diagnosed with cerebral palsy. We simply don't hear these truths. We hear a lot on disability in the election, but it's used as a buzzword. Put simply, these children are the forgotten children of the state, says John. And it's often when we look at the legacies and the history of Ireland, we talk about reckoning with the past and sometimes forget about what's happening under our noses. More messages here. It's like I'm listening to the same story. My son Ben is almost five, non-verbal. After 2 years, he just received his assessment of need with absolutely no therapy provided to him. Our children are forgotten. Early intervention is crucial. Shame on the Irish state. Indeed, that state, as you heard earlier, has made it a legal requirement that an assessment of needs should happen within 6 months, not the 2 years that person has waited for. I'm a primary school teacher. I don't think the teachers receive enough training on ASD, so it's hard to provide enough support for these children when they do come into school. And we've also heard the difficulties of actually getting them there as well. More on disability services. We're 16 years into the system with a child with Down syndrome, with hearing loss, limited speech, who's also a celiac, totally been where those parents are, lost track of the number of appointments that I've left upset. We've accepted that whatever our son needs, we need to try and provide for him basically ourselves, says Susan. Sympathise with those parents. I work in the HSE. I can see that we cannot get and retain therapy staff. We need to double the number of therapists training in colleges by dropping the points to more realistic levels. The pool is too small, particularly in Dublin, where I work. And isn't it just incredible that it keeps going back to the housing disaster that we're living with and that even the government concedes is going to take many, many years to fix. And there seems to be no end to the problems it seems to exacerbate elsewhere.